CA does not have access to the laptop. What is the problem now? I can only see myself. Can you see me?
We can see you, Chair.
Yes, we can see you, Chair.
Oh, but I can't see anybody, just I can only see myself.
No, we can see you. You look very well.
That's a problem to all the bandage you can think about.
No, thank you very much. Can we proceed, Sia? Can you flash the report so that we can quickly adopt it before we move to the NDPP and her team? Thank you very much. The report was circulated yesterday and will be taken as read. It's the report of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services on the removal from office of Ms. J.F. Manskal-Rigg, Chief Magistrate in Captain Park, in terms of Section 13, Subsection 4 of the Magistrate Act of 1993, dated 1st June 2022. Is there a mover for the adoption?
Recording stopped.
Is there a mover for the adoption of the report?
Recording in progress.
So moved, Chair.
Honorable Mola moves. Any seconder? Any seconders, members?
I second the report, Chair.
Honorable Ramo Ruben seconds. Any objections? No objection. The report is agreed to. The report will be sent to the Programming Committee for the debate in the House and for the decision to be taken by the House. Thank you very much, members. We will now welcome the NDPP and her delegation of the National Prosecuting Authority on Progress on the TRC cases. And members will remember that in our last interaction in November with the NDPP and her team, we agreed that we will meet quarterly to receive report on the progress that has been made on the TRC cases. Welcome, NDPP, and to members of your team. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm joined here today by Advocate de Kock, the Deputy National Director, Head of the National Prosecuting Service, under which our TRC component resides, and also Advocate Anton de PC, our Head of Strategy Operations and Compliance, and members of their teams. Chair, this is a really important engagement and with the Portfolio Committee. It is an absolute travesty of justice that victims of these atrocities committed during the apartheid era are still waiting for justice, either in the form of prosecutions or in the form of inquests that are reopened so that they can understand what happened to their loved ones. So for us as lawyers for the people that we are, and given that we take a very victim responsive approach in our strategy, it's really important that the victims that have survived, the survivors, the families, receive some level of justice for these atrocities. The lack of accountability for these crimes, it continues to undermine the rule of law in South Africa. And so, you know, we're certainly not going to go into the reasons why these delays, why the victims of these crimes have not received justice, the majority of them. We know there's been, you know, public information around this regarding the lack of action on the part of politicians. The NPA was in fact hampered from doing its work in many ways. And so notwithstanding all of that, we realized that, well, I shouldn't say notwithstanding, I should say that because of all of that, we realized that we need to act with a real sense of urgency in terms of trying to deliver justice to as many victims and survivors and families that we can. We need to learn from these lessons of the past that I've just mentioned and ensure that the NPA works independently and ensures its credibility, thereby ensures its credibility as we move forward. Time is not on our side, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We all know that. Families are dying. Potential accused are dying. Witnesses are dying. And families are dying not knowing what happened to their loved ones. So for all of these reasons, we've had even accused persons dying in one or two of our matters. So to act with an absolute sense of urgency is hugely important. And so, you know, but this is not just something that the NPA does. We work very, very closely with the DPCI, because in as much as the NPA is often called upon to account for this, and we need to, it needs to be remembered that the NPA does not have an investigative capacity to investigate these matters. And therefore, we've had to work very, very closely, in particular with our colleagues in the SAPS, in the DPCI, in order to ensure that we are able to deal with these matters with the sense of urgency that I just mentioned. Just some of the highlights since in the past 6 months, Chair. We have established in the NPA a dedicated TRC component under the DNDPP advocate Rodney de Kock. Yes, I see the presentation's now being flighted. If we can go to slide 3, please. So we have established a dedicated capacity. You will recall, Chair, that the TRC matters were being dealt with in what was regarded as the Priority Crimes Litigation Unit, or the PCLU, in the NPA for a number of years. Now, the PCLU, this was not the only, this was not, they had a number of other issues that they needed to deal with in addition to these matters. And so, including international crimes, including terror crimes relating to terrorism, and including the TRC matters. And there was a component, a very, very small component, of around 7 staff members in this particular component. And I should actually say to this honorable committee that the PCLU, as it was known, is non-existent in the NPA at the moment, because most of the colleagues have either resigned or been sent back to the divisions. So there's a new component in the NPS, and this particular, and out, we've also created this dedicated TRC component in the NPS. we've appointed additional dedicated capacity. And when I say dedicated, Chair, we mean that the prosecutors that are dealing with these matters deal with nothing else but these TRC matters. In addition, the DPCI has worked with us and they've done the same. And Advocate de Kock will give you some more details when he presents in terms of the numbers that we have. But it is also dedication on the part of the DPCI. And this is critically important because in the past, as I said, we had very few staff members that were dealing with a number of other issues in addition to the TRC matters. And this, it's not possible. If we want to act urgently in these matters, we needed a dedicated capacity. So this is what we are doing. We have a full-time coordinator at the national office who is working very, very closely with the little teams that we have in the regions. The numbers, as Advocate de Kock will set out, depends on the workload in the particular division, and we have based our numbers on that, and the DPCI has also done the same. Next slide, please. Chair, I've talked about the capacity that we've developed, and I'm really pleased to say that our efforts are paying off. We've had a substantial improvement over the last 7 months, which has resulted, as you will note, in the reopening of 38 new investigations into deaths of detainees. You will recall, Chair, that in the recent times, these cases where there were families of detainees who had died, who had means, who were able to get lawyers appointed and try to push these cases. But what we've done is we've reopened. We are looking at all of these matters. And so even in cases where families cannot afford this, we are now looking at all the deaths and detentions. And as you can see, we've reopened 38 new investigations in that regard. There are currently 97 matters under investigations. And there are more matters that we have identified that will be reopened. You may have noted in the media, and the family has been advised as well. It was only this week after the national director was approached by the DPP in the Western Cape, Advocate Nicolette Bell, who's been working very, very closely with the families of the late Mr. Imam Haroon, that upon the recommendation of the DPP in the Western Cape, I recommended to the minister that we reopen this inquest, and the minister has done that and even appointed a judge in the Western Cape to deal with this matter, and the families have been informed of this development. Chair, the Missing Persons Task Team that was established many years ago in the NPS continues to do excellent work in terms of locating and exhuming the remains of missing persons. And so far, 167 persons have been identified and returned, and the remains returned to the affected families. Chair, this matter, as I said, is, one might say that we're not moving as fast as we should be. But Chair, rest assured, we are in the NPA together with the DPCI doing everything possible to ensure that all of these matters get the attention. The numbers speak for themselves, and certainly hopefully when we report the next time, you will see more developments in this regard in terms of matters being investigated and hopefully being finalized. Chair, I'm going to hand over to Advocate Rodney de Kock, Deputy National Director, who will take you through some of the detail. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Auntie Pika. Advocate de Kock.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members of the Committee. I trust that I can be heard. I can't see myself, but I trust that I'm visible and I can be heard, Chairperson.
Yes, you can be heard and you're visible.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Chairperson, just to pick up on the matter of Imam Haroon, the judge president of the Western Cape High Court just recently responded to the letter of the minister and has appointed a Judge Tulari of that division to hear the inquest in relation to Imam Haroon. Of course, the prosecution team in the Director of Public Prosecution's office will now engage with the court in terms of the process to manage the inquest under the direction of the judge that has been assigned by the JP. So, as far as the dedicated capacity that the NDPP has spoken about, this is the detail currently in all our divisions. You will see that we have allocated based on the number of matters that are located in each province. And this dedicated capacity is additional capacity that the MPA has appointed to manage the work in each part of the country. So KwaZulu-Natal Division has four additional capacity, senior state advocates. So all of these posts are at the level of senior state advocate, which is the highest or the most senior litigation post in the prosecution currently. Of course, we do have deputy directors, but the senior state advocates are the ones who take our most challenging cases to our courts. In the Western Cape, it's three. In Gauteng Local Division, we have three. In the Gauteng Division Pretoria, we have one. We've received a motivation from the Gauteng Division Pretoria for additional three, and we have approved the additional three, and we will try and get those additional prosecutors as soon as possible. Limpopo Division 1, Northwest Division 1, Eastern Cape Division 1. We've received a request from the DPP of the police of the Eastern Cape for an additional three, and those have also been approved. We will speedily make sure that we can get additional prosecutors in those divisions. And then at the head office, we currently have two colleagues, a coordinator and a deputy director assigned to the TRC work. We anticipate that we will appoint additional three colleagues at the national level under head office. So as far as the DPCI is concerned, on the right-hand side of the slide, that is the breakdown of the DPCI investigators. And the model that we are following is that those investigators and the prosecutors work solely on TRC matters. And so that is the difference that we've introduced, whereas before matters would be assigned to a prosecutor that potentially has many other matters. As far as this group of people are concerned, both the investigators now and the prosecutors are solely working on the TRC matters. And so we know that we're confident that this will speed up the investigations that we will talk about in the next few slides. So at the head office, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, DPCI 17, Coastal Region, KwaZulu-Natal 4, Eastern Cape 8, Western Cape 2, Karoo Region, Free State, and Northwest 2. Of course, these colleagues are also being supported by the broader SAPS component. So it's not that although they're dedicated, where they need additional assistance, of course, SAPS is there. And similar with the prosecution. Although we itemized these colleagues, they are operating within the broader framework of the prosecution. So all the support, advice from time to time, and senior colleagues helping on matters, that broader support is also available within the respective offices of the DPPs. If we can move to the next slide. Um, So the key to the fast tracking of the cases was an understanding of exactly where the matters are. And a lot of time has been spent over the last few months to get a good sense of where cases are. Matters were identified from the list for fast tracking, and consideration was given to the seriousness of the evidence, the age of the matters, the age of the accused persons, of interest, the witnesses, the availability of experts, and exhibits and documentary evidence. A lot of work has been done at the head office level to ensure that where the head office can assist the regions with records, much of the records are archived, and a lot of engagement has happened to ensure that the regions receive relevant documentation from archives in Pretoria, so that we can assist the investigators and the prosecutors in the divisions. Then divisions were encouraged to develop action plans within the set timeframes in respect of the prioritization of these matters so that we can ensure a speedy finalization of these cases. And of course, we expect the divisions to give us a critical analysis on a monthly basis in terms of progress in respect of all matters. We receive our reports on the 5th of each month, and it is a compulsory requirement that our divisions submit reports to my office, where we, through the coordinator and our head office colleagues, where we assess and we then comment in terms of progress. Where we feel progress is not sufficient, we of course engage, one, and we also support our division. So it's a collaborative approach, and the strategic direction in terms of how we do the work is set from our national office, and we assist the divisions in terms of getting the work done. There's a dire need to prioritize TRC matters, and then we also have a planned MPA-DPCI regional workshop plan. This is largely going to be a training workshop. We will look at a number of issues in terms of the specifics around the TRC work. It is unique because the majority of these cases are very old, and so we need to have a kind of a different methodology and different approach in terms of how we do the work. Of course, we will engage with our partners as well in terms of bringing on additional expertise to assist us as far as these cases are concerned. And that workshop is planned on the 13th of June. We will bring all the prosecutors who have been appointed, all the investigators together over a period of 2 or so days, and we will really thrash out further approaches and understandings in terms of how we're going to fast-track this work. As far as the monitoring and evaluation is concerned, if we can move to the next slide, we have, as far as the methodology is concerned, we grade the status of each investigation into these three categories. So the first phase of the investigation will be the initial phase, the collation of evidence, getting inquest records, other important evidentiary information, etc. The second phase relates to additional reports, expert reports. Sometimes we have to reconstruct the crime scenes. Sometimes we need additional experts in terms of the pathology reports. The committee must appreciate that some of these reports were done years ago, many years ago, and all of this evidence needs to be reviewed again, the evidence about how exactly the colleagues died, and then the medical information and medical reports. So these are all additional expert reports, expert evidence that we have to then collate in preparation for a hearing, either in court as an inquest or in court as a prosecution. And then the last category relates to category C, where we say it's now near a decision. And so hopefully in this way, we are better able to understand the progress in each investigation. And so once again, we're confident that we're making good progress. Move to the next slide. So as far as the investigations under consideration, the committee will recall that when we attended the committee, I think it was in September last year, we were sitting on 59 matters that were under investigated. At that stage, we had identified 55 potential names only of matters. A lot of work had to be done on that 55 to consider whether they qualify for further investigation. And so what this slide is telling you is the progress in respect of each month since September. So we move from September, October, November. You will see that it's relatively static. This is when a lot of work was done to understand those matters. And then you will see from January there was significant movement. When the blue bar indicates an increase, those matters are then formally referred for investigation. And then our teams that have been appointed, they receive those matters, and those teams are then assigned to do the investigations. So you will see then from January, February, it moved to 95. March 97 and April currently, that was the last month, 97. So we still have 18 matters that are for consideration to be reopened. Those would be additional matters. And then, of course, ongoing work is continuing to identify any other matters that we may not either be aware of or matters that must still be referred to us. And so, again, I emphasize this is in a joint approach, collaborative approach between the prosecution and the DPCI investigators. And these are, of course, regarded as priority crimes, and that is why we've got our most senior colleagues working on these matters at the moment. So if we move to the next slide, we will do a divisional breakdown of the matters. Firstly, if we look at the pie chart, we will see that as far as category A is concerned, 60% of the matters are in that category. And that is also because, as you could see, a large number of matters were referred from January of this year. We will, of course, make sure that those matters, the bulk of them within the next quarter, should be moving to category B. And hopefully by the third quarter, a lot of the matters will be in category C. Once they're in category C, they are ripe for decision making. So if we use the example of the Ina Maroon matter, that matter started a few months ago last year, and very quickly we were able to do various things, including get additional expert reports in the matter, and then to get the DPP of the division in the Western Cape and the prosecutors assigned to make a recommendation in respect of the matter. So that was the decision. The decision was a recommendation to the NDPP to approach the minister to reopen the inquest. So our work is designed to understand the evidence, to get the evidence as quickly as possible, so that the prosecutors are able to make a decision in the matter. The decision will be either an inquest or the decision will be a decision to prosecute. There may be a decision not to prosecute, and that will be based on an evaluation of the entirety of the evidence that we collected if we decide there's a decision not to prosecute. So if we look at the right-hand column of the slide, that will indicate the progress in respect of the TLC matters as at the end of April 2022, as per the various divisions of the country. So currently the Eastern Cape have the bulk they've got a substantial number of matters, They moved very quickly from a low number. Currently, they have 13 matters. 10 of the matters are in Category A. 3 matters are currently in Category B. And I've been informed by the DPP, one matter, the Cradock 4 matter that we spoke about on the last occasion, is actually now in Category C. There are just one or two aspects that needs to be done. And there's been a request for some additional expert opinion in respect of the matter in terms of the evaluation of some of the evidence. And we are working closely with the lawyers that have been appointed. So as far as that matter is concerned, I've been informed by the DPP as soon as they receive the final outstanding opinion and a few other issues, the DPP will be able to make a decision in respect of the Cradock 4 matter as well. The Free State, we have two, Gauteng Local Division 4, KZN currently 5 plus 2 plus 12. 12 matters are ready for decision or shortly for decision in the KZN. And we've also agreed that we are having a provincial workshop of KZN that will take place next week as well. It's a 2 or 3 day workshop where all the KZN cases will be discussed. And we will send our national colleagues to KZN to go in this assist them in KZN. So KZN currently then has a total of 19 matters. Limpopo Division, we currently have 4. You will see the progress, the same methodology. Mpumalanga Division 3, Eastern Cape and Tata 7. So just bear in mind that Eastern Cape and Tata and Eastern Cape Division is now under one director of public prosecutions. Currently, that director of Mtata takes responsibility for the entire Eastern Cape. So in effect, the Eastern Cape has 20 matters that are currently under investigation. Northwest 4, Northern Cape 3, Gauteng Division 20. So Gauteng GLD and Gauteng DP, they will combine at 28 matters. So 28 matters are then currently in Gauteng. And of course, the Western Cape has nine matters. And we see the two. And one of those two would have been the Imamaroon matter. And that one, as you now know, is moving into the High Court. If we can move to the next slide. Just some of the noteworthy matters that the committee is aware of. These are some of the matters that we have dealt with. The Rodriguez, the Dr. Agate, the Neil Agate matter, Ernest DiPaoli matter on the next slide, please. The Ernest DiPaoli matter, we are awaiting the judgment from the court in relation to the evidence that has been led in that inquest. The Avergy matter in KZN, we're also awaiting the judgment of the court. The COSAS 4 matter has been placed on the court roll in the South Gauteng High Court on the 19th of July, 2022. State versus Kutsia and another. The trial date was set for the 6th to the 17th of June. We did understand that there was a delay because of COVID in relation to this matter, but this matter is on the court roll ready to proceed. The State versus Joan Marie, the matter postponed to the 20th of June, 22 in the Regional Court, Benoni. So just to summarize, Chairperson and honourable members, you will see that in KZN, we have 4 matters where decisions are imminent: Mpumalanga Division 1, Northwest Division 2, Northern Cape 1, Gauteng Division 1, Western Cape 1. Is the spending decision of the minister. So this one has been done. This is the matter that we, at the time that the slides were prepared for parliament, we were still waiting the minister's decision. The Eastern Cape one, that is the Cradock 4 matter that I've just reflected upon. So there are 12 matters that are imminent, 11 matters that are imminent, ready for decisions, subject to the formalities that has to take place within the prosecution when we make our decisions in respect of these matters. And then, of course, we will receive the reports that are furnished to me.
Sorry, I forgot to talk.
Yes, sir.
My challenge is that with respect to the Western Cape one, you specify that is the Imam Haram case and the Cradock 4, and then the others is 1, 2. We don't know who these cases are.
Yes, we can give details of those cases to the committee, Chairperson. If you need the details now, I will ask the colleagues to give the names of those matters, or we can give the details in writing to the committee.
It's important that the whole world is watching, and with a serious interest on the progress of this case, that people know who are these four, who are these one, two, at least we must have the names.
The names, all right, we will do that. I'm just going to conclude then, ask the NDP people to proceed, and we will come back to give the names in respect of those matters, Chairperson. Thank you. So that's all from our side, and I hand it back to the NDP people.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Yes. Not good to wear earrings with masks, Chair. No, you got that out. Thank you, Chair. So Chair, that's the report of which has more detail. We'll certainly come back to you on the names of those cases. We've got the full list here. We're just selecting those particular ones. Chair, just to reiterate that, you know, we're not where we want to be, but we have certainly come a long way in terms of trying to address these matters. I want to really give the assurance to the committee, to the people of this country, to the families of victims that this is a top priority for the NPA, and we certainly hope that we will be able to make significantly more progress on these matters as we move forward with it. We are committed to working with the families, with the legal representatives of some of the families, and with other critical stakeholders. This is not just something that the NPA does on its own. We have to work collectively and also with the support of this committee to make sure that we're able to bring justice to the families of the victims of the atrocities during the apartheid era. We are acting with an incredible sense of urgency. We know that time is not on our side. We're also thinking, we're moving towards building a more sustainable capacity in the NPA to deal with the TRC and other complex crimes. That's not to say that colleagues that are currently dedicated will be dealing with other crimes, but we've realized that at the moment we have a number of contract appointments dealing with these matters. We were fortunate to get from the DPSA a deviation to appoint these colleagues on a three-year contract because of the fact that these cases take longer. So we're very pleased that we've got that. So these colleagues are in for at least 3 years, but we realize that we need the capacity in the NPA, and so we're going to try to convert these to a permanent capacity because we know that even when these matters are concluded, there is, with the amount of work that the NPA has in other areas, other complex crimes, there will always be a need for prosecutors to be dealing with those matters. So we're looking to convert the current contract capacity into a permanent capacity. As Advocate de Kock mentioned, tailored training to deal with these matters and to ensure that working with meaningful partnerships of a whole range of stakeholders, in particular with the families that we can bring justice to the families and victims of these apartheid era crimes. Thank you very much, Chair. Those are the that's the presentation. I'll come back to you perhaps after the questions with the names of those matters as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, NDPP. Thank you for, to Advocate Gok. Members, that is the presentation. I have the hand of Advocate Dennis Breitenbach, followed by Honorable Hendricks, Honorable Yako, Honorable Ngola, Honorable Newwood Johan, in that order. Honorable Dennis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. And thank you for the update. Of course, the update is encouraging, and it's clear that finally serious attention is being, and appears to being paid to these matters. It, of course, begs the question of what has happened in the preceding sort of 25 years, and why in the entire history of the PCLU this progress wasn't made before. And who was responsible for that lack of progress, and what has been done? What are the consequences for that lack of progress? So I'd like to know that. Who was in charge of that unit, and why did it not make any progress, and what were the consequences for not for that progress not being made? That demonstrates a serious lack of accountability. And I think that the committee is entitled to know, you know, what went on, or the lack of what went on. Why is that? The national director says that we're not going to go into the reasons for this for the delays. Well, in fact, that is precisely what this committee is here to do. To determine what the reasons for the delays were and to ensure that they don't reoccur. So please do delve into the reasons for the delays. Then I want to just concentrate on one or two specific matters. There are so many, and I'm sure my colleagues will deal with other individual matters, but particularly the Cradock 4 matter. We know that Mr. Lucanio Colata went to court to get an order to compel in July 2021. It's now almost a year later. And there's not a lot of discernible progress in that matter. There's still, you know, nothing in court. There appears to be some progress made with regards to negotiations, but nothing tangible, you know, that we can see on a court roll. The deadline that was given in writing by the NPA was missed. We were then told that the deadline was just a show of good faith, which wasn't met. And now, you know, where are we with the matter? When can we look forward to what is a concrete timeline that we can look forward to some progress in this matter? And while you're dealing with that, I'd like to know whether the family of the Cradock 4, or certainly Mr. Colata as an interested party, is kept up to date. Is there communication with him? Is there communication with the families of the Cradock 4? Do they know what's going on? Are they consulted? Are they treated as part of the process? And if not, because my information is that they're not, then, you know, why not? It seems to be deeply disrespectful to not include them in information. And I'm not referring to talking to their lawyers. I'm referring to the families themselves. A similar question is with regards to the matter of Imam Haran. The Minister of Justice announced that he was, in a public announcement, that he was going to approach the JP to appoint a judge to deal with this matter. And that's where the family of Imam Haran heard about it. Now, I mean, why on earth would they not be informed? Why would they not be consulted? Why are they not treated with more respect? And if that's not your mistake, well, then please say so, and the Minister of Justice must explain it. But I would expect in these circumstances, and after such a long, unforgivable delay, that families would be treated with much greater respect. Those are my initial questions, and I'm sure my colleagues will deal with the others. But I find it deeply disturbing that the lack of progress, lack of tangible progress, and the fact that the families are not really made part of this process, I find that quite disturbing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dennis Breckenbach, Honourable Hendricks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you very much for this opportunity, which is very close to the hearts of the Muslim community and the Pan-African Congress. Al-Jamaa raised this matter 6 times over the past 3 years, and the last time in September, and then we got a detailed reply to our parliamentary question, and I'm pleased to say that the National Director of Public Prosecution has delivered on her promises, and we would like to thank her very much for the progress that has been made so far. Honourable Chair, I'm very disturbed that decisions are taken to prosecute or not to prosecute. Just imagine how those families must feel if at the end of this whole process, after waiting 25 years or more, that they are now told, sorry, we are not prosecuting. So there has to be some exit strategy if that happens. I personally feel that even if the evidence is weak, that every family must see that the perpetrators have their day in court, and it's up to the courts to decide. But just not to continue, I think is very, very sad. We're very pleased that there is now, for the first time, a dedicated team, I think 33 members, full-time dealing with TRC cases. And that is very important because after a revolution, then those who perpetrated the crimes are dealt with severely. This has been postponed. And and now that there's a dedicated team, it's the first step. But the second step, and maybe, is that they need to be a dedicated SAPS team, double the amount of 33. If there's not a dedicated SAPS team, then nothing is going to happen. We know that when there are high-profile cases, the Minister of Police launches his 24-hour or 48 team to find the perpetrators. That is what needs to be done now. I would imagine that the Minister of Police would put in place at least 6 or 7 such teams if there are 6 or 7 cases that is at the final stages. We also raised the issue of Chief Albert Luthuli. We were promised the names later in the meeting, and here you are right, the whole world is watching. The Luthuli family is also watching. They want to hear that their matter is at either stage 1, 2, 3, or 4, or what is happening. It cannot be that the leader of the PAC, Imam Harun, the leader of the ANC, we are treating these matters not very seriously. I'm glad that the honorable member raised the issue of Cradock 4. I sat with the member of parliament coming from that area. It is quite a serious issue, and it's a betrayal to the people, not of Cradock, but the whole of South Africa. The honorable member also spoke about the poor communication. Maybe the National Public Prosecutor must speak to the Government Department of Communications to assist them with communications, because the communications, our parliamentary constituency office, we've had a lot of complaints that there's very poor communication, very poor collaboration. Families are not kept informed. And no matter what the National Director of Public Prosecution is going to say in response to Honorable Breitenbach's comment, the Harun family only heard about this in the media.
And the first person they phoned was me and said, you know, what's happening? I said, no, look, it's very strange that the Western Cape team has let the country down and not informed the families that there is some progress. Just imagine the relief that it would have brought to them, which was now denied. Yes, I understand that inquests are very important, and we are now very happy that a judge of the High Court will now be conducting the inquest. We also heard in the report that a lot of bodies have been found. I'm not sure whether inquests have been held on those bodies and whether that is also on the list to find the perpetrators. We need to get that answer. And then there are people that's still alive, not in graves, but in jails, people from the PAC, the ANC in Qatar. We need to find out, because that is all part of the so-called TRC cases. People have, you know, instead of putting them in graves, they were put in jails and hidden in jails and maybe half-killed and are languishing in jails. So, like you say, Chair, the whole world is waiting. I don't know whether delay, the Honorable Breitenbach also wanted to know why the delay. I'm not sure if the delay is because the NDPP and government is scared of AfriForum. They need to tell us whether they are. But we need to bring these matters to a head. And lastly, President Ramaphosa spoke about the social compact, that communities and corporate world and the public need to work together. Now is the time for the corporate world, whose hands are not clean. Their hands are the dirtiest in this whole process. They need to provide funding so that more resources can be thrown to bring these matters to a head. Our top law firms must at least make available 5 of their staff full-time at a very senior level and give as much resources as possible. That's the social compact that I understood President Ramaphosa raised. And I hope, Honorable Chair, thank you very much for your leadership in this matter. You've been very strong that we need to bring it to the head, and I'm sure that you've been working behind the scenes, and that's why we have seen that the National Director of Public Prosecutions has delivered. And thank you, Advocate de Kock. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hendricks. Honorable Breitenbach, can you lower your hand? Yes, Honorable Yako, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I only have 2 points. I believe I've been partly covered by my colleagues. I just wanted to know, especially to Advocate de Kock, as far as what is the reasoning behind having a certain amount of prosecutors per province as opposed to the amount of cases per province? Because I see that there's some low numbers in some provinces. However, the cases that they're dealing with there are very high. So can they explain what the logic is behind that? It doesn't make sense to me personally. Secondly, to Advocate Batoy, I think my colleagues have expatiated enough on why there's been a delay, because these are very serious crimes, serious cases that are being handled. And has there been any political interference that has hampered the NPA from doing its job in prosecuting the crimes of apartheid? And if she can be as honest as possible, because this is one platform that we can protect you and we can protect the people of this country who've been victimized by apartheid crimes. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Yako. Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sorry, Honorable Mola. Honorable Yako. Yeah, okay. Honorable Yako has lowered her hand. That's good. Thank you very much. You can proceed.
Chair, let me equally echo the sentiments of my fellow colleagues, particularly in affirming that indeed, by the looks of the presentation, there seems that there is a progress indeed that has been made. But I think as both Honorable Yako and Honorable Breitenbach are saying, that we take the work of the prosecuting authority very serious. And in particular, in a society where crime is rising on a daily basis. Now, to say there has been a hampering of the functioning of the prosecuting authority is a very serious statement, which I think the NDPP can help us unpack that. But equally, in the report, there is what they call cases that were reopened. You can see progress from September 2021 to April 2022. Now, if these cases are reopened, it means that at some point they were closed. Is there a link between that closure of those matters and this hampering the NDPP is talking about? The second issue I wish to raise is that, yes, indeed, because these are crimes against humanity that were committed more than 28 years back. So indeed, nature will dictate that some of the accused or some of the witnesses or some of any person who may be of help to some of these matters may have been no longer with us now, in that they are deceased. But we think particularly that this process does not only revolves around arresting and then doing those things. These families need solace. These families need closure. So when they know what happened to their family member, that indeed will bring comfort and closure to them. So even at the time when those who may have been involved in the killing of our own people, even if they are now deceased, but we are doing it for the families, we're doing it for our communities, who all understand that indeed apartheid was a crime against humanity. The cases, Chair, that have been referred for investigation or whose investigation is underway are reported to be 97. Now, in this 97, what then becomes the strategic turnaround time of the prosecuting authority to ensure that these matters are finalized? Should we give you two years? Should we give you 6 months? Should we give you 5 years? Because what is important is these matters have been dragging for quite too long. Even the report actually is reaffirming that. They've been dragging for too long. In a normal society, we're not supposed to be discussing these matters 28 years after democracy. Chair, on the issue of the CRADOC 4, it's in the matters whose decision is imminent. I don't get that one. Whose decision is imminent? Is it a court decision? Is it an NPA decision? Is the minister's decision? Which decision are we talking about? And next to that item that speaks about the CRADOC 4, there is one, then there is there are brackets that are written CRADOC 4. I don't understand that. I don't understand what that one represents as it relates to the CRADOC 4. Maybe twist a little bit, Chair, lastly, the question by Honorable Breitenbach of the communication. Maybe not to focus on the Galata family alone, but a question that I would want to rephrase it and say, is there a constant communication with all the families of to which these cases are directed to? Thank you very much, Chair, for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkhala. Can you lower your hand? Thank you very much, Dr. Nigot Joha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone on the platform. Thank you to the NPA for their presentation, your presentation. Thank you so much. I do not want to repeat what my previous colleagues have said and not going to repeat that, but they do highlight a very important thing that I wanted to say with regards to the crime against humanity. And I mean, we repeat talk about this, but bringing closure to the pain of the families, I feel, is not happening. And as my colleagues have said, but what I also wanted to say with regards to the training is that Mr. de Kock mentioned training. I wanted to know what is the training all about. You know, we are hoping that the NPA has been working on these cases and now you're going to have training. So I'm just querying what the training is all about, who provides the training. And I feel, you know, training should not be a delay in this, in resolving these issues. So I just wanted to know what the training is necessary for, and the rest of the things my colleagues have covered. Thank you, Chair. Oh, sorry. One more thing. For the numbers that Mr. de Kock is still bringing, those cases, I want to know, has the NPA interacted with each of the family members of those cases or not? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Nigot Joha. NDPP.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. I will deal with some questions first, and then my colleagues will come through, and then there might be some that I might sweep up at the end. Just in terms of Honorable Breitenbach's questions about what happened in the preceding 25 years, I think it would be, and there was actually a couple of other questions. I think it was Honorable Yako that talked about political interference. It was also, I think it's Honorable Nolam that may have mentioned the hampering of the functioning of the NPA. So there are a couple of honourable members that have mentioned the issue of possible interference and delay. I should at the outset say, Chair, that there has been no political interference at all since I have taken office. And but if one reads the affidavit of the previous NDPP, Vusi Pikoli, I think it would be very clear to the members what kind of interference, in his view, the NPA was subjected to at that time. So I would urge members to please refer to his affidavit in that regard. In the Rodriguez judgment, the judge asked, directed in fact, that the NDPP look into the issue of possible political interference in the functioning of the NPA at that time. I've been engaging with the minister in this regard, and the minister has I'm not sure if he's taken a final decision yet. I don't think he has. So I don't really want to speak for the minister because it is his decision, but I'm working with him. But we are looking at he's looking at a high-level panel or some inquiry that will be able to look into the very issue that honourable members have raised Hopefully that will maybe address the issue of understanding exactly what happened, as well as possible accountability. Just to say that those discussions are really at a very advanced stage, and hopefully there will be some notification in that regard fairly soon. Chair, my colleagues will, in respect of the Craddock 4 matter, we're all aware of the painful history of this matter and how long it's taken. We're also aware that the NPA has been, there have been orders to compel that have been brought. I want to say to the committee, and hopefully you will understand that we really mean this. It's not just words. When we have a case, we will decide to prosecute. There's absolutely no reason for us in the NPA, if there is evidence against anyone, for the DPP not to take the decision to prosecute. So bringing applications to compel us mean that we have to engage counsel. It costs us to go to court, but we've been engaging with families because we don't want to be working against the families. We are both on the same side. We both want justice for the victims. And I want to really assure this community, this committee and the people of South Africa, that if there is sufficient evidence, we will prosecute. There's absolutely no reason why we will delay or dilly-dally with taking a decision if there is sufficient evidence to prosecute. And I mean sufficient evidence because we must take a decision to prosecute when we, in our expert opinions, in the prosecutor's expert opinions, in the DPP's expert opinions, who are all very experienced, we have a case, we have reasonable prospects of a successful prosecution. To do otherwise could result in us being sued for malicious prosecutions. And so Honorable Hendricks says, I understand very well, Honorable Hendricks, the need for families to really understand and to get closure. But for us to bring a prosecution where we have weak evidence simply on the basis that the families need to know is not the way to go. We could open ourselves up to civil damages claims, malicious prosecution claims, which could cost the government, the NPA, a lot of money. But what we do in many of those instances is we've been asking the minister, as we did in the Imam Haroon matter, to hold a formal inquest. That means it's not one that's held in a magistrate or a judge's chambers. It is one that is open to the public. It's one where oral evidence is led in a court of law where witnesses can be cross-examined, and at the end of the day, the magistrate or judge makes a finding. So that in itself is a very important process for families to get a level of closure where there isn't sufficient evidence for the DPP to take a decision to prosecute. Chair, with regard to the Craddock 4 matter, investigations at a very advanced stage. My understanding is that we hope to, within a month to 6 weeks, hopefully it will not be longer than that, the DPP will make a decision in this matter. Chair, with regard to questions around capacity, and before I move on to let me go on to capacity. SAPS are certainly trying to assist with this, and we can only urge them to assist with capacity. We know that the DPCI is seriously constrained given the work that they have to do. So many of the members that they've appointed now have been newly recruited, and recruitment does take a long time. But maybe it might be an idea for the next time that we report for the committee to consider inviting the DPCI to report with us. With regard to communications, we are making a huge effort to communicate with the families directly. It would be of concern where there are a number of families that are writing saying that they are still not being, they don't have enough information. But certainly from our side, we are going to improve on this. It is critical that the families are updated in terms of progress with regard to these matters. I do want to say that with regard to the issue of Imam Haroon, this morning when I knew that we were going to mention this matter in Parliament, I called my colleague Advocate Cock and I said, please, can you confirm that the family has been informed? We called the DPP, Nicolette Bell, her office, and we got the confirmation that we had informed the family. But the minister makes a decision, and regrettably, there was a public statement issued from the minister's office before before actually informing the family. We are going to make sure that in future, the minute we get written communication from the minister, we will communicate immediately. It's just, I was concerned this morning that I would say something in this public platform and the families would hear it on this platform, which for me was not acceptable. So we want to apologize for that. It should not happen, and we will certainly make sure that the communications, not in respect of just this family, but all communications, are significantly improved in terms of keeping the public informed. I do want to emphasize, we are not afraid of AfriForum. We do our work not because AfriForum or any other group puts any pressure on us. We do our work because we know it is what we need to do. And rest assured, we will do our jobs. We will do it properly when we have the evidence. We will prosecute. There may be other groups that need to find relevance and speak more to the media about certain things. We don't do that. We just do our work, and we will keep families informed more so that they're aware of what is going on. Chair, with regard to the issue of training, my colleagues will deal with it to the extent that it needs to be. But just to assure Honourable Nivo Drachen, this is not really prosecutors who don't know, what to do and restarting. And whilst this is happening, nothing's going on. Rest assured, as Advocate Cox said, we have really experienced prosecutors that know how to deal with these matters. But dealing with these particular crimes, these atrocities committed in the apartheid era, requires a slightly different approach, because these are very old matters and we need to go into the archives, the investigation techniques. We also involve the investigators. It is slightly different. So we try to give them that kind of, assistance and support so that they can move quicker with the cases. So it's certainly not starting with training from scratch, and it certainly will not delay the matters. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Advocate Cock to take some of the questions, and then I'll come back and if there's anything further outstanding.
Advocate Cock.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chair, I would just like to start off by emphasising that we've also requested all the provincial directors of public prosecutions to view and participate in this hearing today. So our colleagues are hearing firsthand some of the concerns that have been raised. And of course, the issue of the communication with the families and the victims are very critical to the way in which the NPA operates in terms of our own standards and our own norms. There are issues that I've received some comments from DPPs where some family members have lawyers that they need to communicate through the lawyers, and that is just in terms of the protocols. But of course, it is something that we'll encourage our colleagues to deal with directly with those lawyers, because our view remains that we are the lawyers for the people, for the victims, and the victims need to hear from us firsthand. So if we get that approach going forward, we in the NPA give our commitment that is really the approach that we take. The other point that I wish to emphasize is that we meet with the directors on a monthly basis. in our various operational meetings and our national operational meeting in particular, where a number of urgent priorities of the MPA are discussed. The TRC matters is a standing item on that agenda, in which we delve in quite detail in terms of the issues around progress in relation to all of these cases. So besides all the mechanisms that we have put in place, the accountability rests directly on the shoulders of each director of public prosecutions and, of course, on the shoulders of us as the operational entities within the prosecuting authority. And from the national point of view, we hold our prosecutors and our DPPs accountable for the progress. So going forward, this is the undertaking that we make, that we will monitor, we will evaluate the progress, and we will report back directly to all the affected families and the victims in relation to all of the relevant cases. There was a question about the allocation of resources per province. This allocation happens based on the number of cases in the division. And as we indicated in the slides, we allocated more cases as we reopened more matters. And that is why I said in the Eastern Cape, we are giving additional three or four prosecutors. And then in Gauteng, I think it was the other area, we're also giving additional. So it's just based on the numbers and the volumes that they have to deal with. So that is why in some instances we'll have one, because currently we only have two. But let's say we allocate 10 cases to a division that at the moment only has two, immediately we will look to beef up the resources that are given to that particular division. So that is the approach as far as the resources are concerned. On the issue of the training, just to expand on what the NDPP is saying, so there's a number of additional issues that we will look at, for example, certain strategies that must be followed in the investigation of these matters. And remember, when we get to courts, the normal rules apply in terms of litigation and the procedures that need to be followed in our courts. And so these are the issues that falls broadly under training. That we will look at, but it's really to understand what strategies will we follow in terms of how we investigate, how we prosecute, what are the particular issues that may impact upon our investigations. We've heard about many of these records have been destructed. We need to reconstruct records. It's a difficult task. We need to find records. And so we share best practices. So this workshop is going to really take it to enhance the work that's currently happening and to share a lot of the best practices that we have learned already from some of the matters that we are bringing to the courts. Chairperson, from our side, the final issue relates to the names that you asked me about. So I do have the names that have been given to me in relation to that particular slide, where we had indicated these matters are up for, shortly will be up for decision making. And I want to emphasize that that is the context of the names, because all the matters are getting priority attention. But we tried to say in the slide, and that was the slide that says matters where decisions are imminent. But the names are not to be confused with that it's only these names that are receiving attention. All the matters are receiving priority attention. These are the ones that hopefully within a short period of time we will then communicate. And now we understand, we communicate immediately with the victims and the families before we communicate broadly in the media. And we'll try to find that balance, because sometimes things get into the media before we get an opportunity to communicate with the victims and with the families. So in KZN, there were four matters, Ntombi Kasa, Kubeka, Mr. Opa Mudondo, Mr. Subu Pewa, Mr. Goodwill Sekakani. Those were the KZN matters in Mpumalanga, Mr. Sweet Sambo, Northwest, Mr. Brian Mukulunga, and in Northwest again, Mrs. Irene Mutasi. Northern Cape, Mr. Mtuyisi Boy Manti. North Gauteng, Victoria, Mr. Welcome Kadili. The Western Cape, the one we have had a pending, it was Mr. Maroon. And in the Eastern Cape, the Craddock 4, Mr. Ford Kalata, Mr. Matthew Kaniwe, Mr. Sequelo Maluli, and Mr. Sparrow Mkonto. So those are the names that are imminent in relation to those matters. The communications will happen very shortly. Colleagues, NDPP and members of the committee, Chairperson, that is from our side. Thank you.
Not sure whether the question that was asked by Honorable Breitenbach was answered as to, in the organization now, who is responsible for some of the delays and what consequences have followed. We know some might have left, but those that are still in the organization.
Chair, I'm not so sure if I misunderstood the question about the delays. My understanding was it was about the delays in the past 25 years. To the extent that these matters don't proceed as quickly as we would like them to, Advocate de Kock has alluded to some of the challenges that we face in these investigations. The main one being that they're very old, and the records have been destroyed, trying to locate witnesses. So we do have dedicated capacities, and we certainly, I would certainly, want to assure the committee that with these dedicated capacities, and hopefully with more capacity, the DPCI, we do need investigators. Investigators are critical to moving these cases forward. The DPCI has you have the capacity, but we take note of the comments by the honourable members about this. We are constantly engaging with our colleagues in the DPCI to try to give more investigators that can work. My understanding is that in the Eastern Cape Division, there's going to be an additional 3 members allocated. In head office, an additional 3. Colleague in Pretoria will look at an additional 4. So, Chair, we are constantly looking at this, but resources, particularly amongst the investigations, it's difficult because it's not a question of the DPCI being able to reassign members because they have a lot on the plate, but they are committed to this process, and they're certainly trying to give us additional capacity. Chair, I'm not sure if we've covered all the questions. I think there was one question by Honourable Mola who asked, he said that at some point, he says cases are being reopened. I hope I understood the question properly. He said at some point these cases would have been closed. Is there a link between these cases being closed and what was happening, what was hampering the NPA in the past? All I can say, Chair, is that, these matters were not receiving attention for various reasons. And, whether there was a link between that and the hampering, I think hopefully the inquiry will unpack that. But certainly they were not receiving attention. And so with the, proper dedicated attention. And so with this dedicated capacity, finding these cases and reopening them in that sense, with this dedicated capacity, that is what we're doing at the moment. In terms of, I'm just looking at my notes. I think that all of the questions have been covered, Chair. There was one more question, Chair, about what period are we targeting to deal with these matters. We are targeting 3 years. That is why we got the resources in for and extended contract appointments for 3 years, and we're certainly hoping that we will be able to have dealt with a significant number of these cases in that period. But of course, there may well be complexities in particular matters, but that's our targeted period, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any members who want to ask a second round of questions? I note Honorable Chele. Are there any other members before I close? Honorable Chele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And also thank you also for the committee and yourself for the support when I needed it. My question, Chairperson, on this one, I just felt like I needed to ask these few questions as a follow-up from Advocate Badoy. The first one, Chairperson, is about, in fact, it's still on the issues of the delay, because when you asked that question, I was having a question of saying within these 5 years that they have been in the office, the delays that happened during that period, I was going to be satisfied to get an answer from that one. But you also, she has also given us answers, Chair. But she also mentioned the issue of weak evidence and no evidence in her words when she was a. So I wanted to find out from Advocate Patoi, how many are those cases that might be affected by that issue of weak and no evidence, not enough evidence when it comes to for them the issues of delay for those cases to come forward to the court, to the prosecution team. But also, Chair, another question that I have is that I want to know, because I heard Advocate de Kock saying he's going to bring the team. Much as we appreciate the progress, Chairperson, but we at the moment where we are as a department, we might be seeing that progress. We might be thanking the department for the efforts that they are doing. But to the families that have been waiting for such a long time, they see us as, why do we have to do that? Because for them, one day passing without them getting justice, it's like 100 years. So my issue is that how are they going to monitor progress so that we are able to, when they come next time, we are not only seeing the team, but we want to see the tangibles. My fear is that, Chair, where we are sitting now, we are sitting with two serious issues in the country. The issue of the prosecution of the state capture wrongs, and this one. Now the country is seeing progress on the other one, which just came now. And there is no progress in those cases that have been there for a long time. What are we saying to the country? What are our priorities when it comes to the TRC issues? Those are the questions that we answer every day to our communities, Chair. So I would like to hear the comment of Advocate Badoy on that one. Also on the presentation, we are talking about the those cases which are on the list of the Category C ones that are awaiting the decision. How long does the department take for them to make a decision on these issues? Maybe if I can understand also the decision that they are talking about. Maybe Mina, I'm talking about the decision to take the matter to court. Or maybe there's another decision, Chairperson, that they are talking about. Maybe I don't understand, but I want to know how long does it take for the case for them to make a decision, particularly on this issue of the TR, TRC cases. Lastly, Chairperson, I'm not sure. I just want to go back to this one also of bringing, okay, I think I've spoken to that one, bringing the team next time when they come. I have alluded to that one, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. NTPP.
Thank you, Chair.
Before you answer, just a few issues. One of the issues is one that was raised by Foundation for Human Rights, that they are struggling to have prosecutors deciding to charge people with crimes against humanity. And the argument is that apartheid was declared a crime against humanity, but there seems to be a resistance to bring that additional charge, which would bring an element of international law. I think if we can get your comments on that. And I think we do really appreciate the report that has been given. But when from the reports that we read and what you have given us, I think colleagues have, I mean, they have summarized what is the sole point. Generally, it's the issue of interacting with the families. Now, the question from me, do you have the list or contact details of all these families? For instance, if you talk about the Costas 4, if you talk about the Credit 4, if you talk about the Simelane case, do you have the exact contact details? And if those families want somebody that they can contact from the NPA, where should they go? Because there can't be some of us who are public representatives. I can guarantee you it's not an easy discussion to have with a person whose loved one was sought or got missing 40 years ago, and up to now there's no closure to that. So if you are saying that, no, you are indeed contacting the families, do you have their details?
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, Honorable Jele mentioned a delay of 5 years, so I'm trying to understand that. I've been in office for 3 years and a couple of months, and I really want to sketch the following. When I took office in 2019, we were dealing with an NPA which did not have any dedicated capacity, as I explained, with a PCLU that had very few members dealing with all of these matters, as well as a whole range of other types of priority matters, like terrorism, like international crimes. There was no dedicated capacity. In the DPCI, likewise, there was no dedicated capacity. And so we, in 2020 of February, the first year, you are trying to understand what your priorities are. You're trying to liaise with stakeholders. We had the meeting with General Labia in February of 2020, where the issues particularly of TRC matters and terrorism matters, because they are dealt with in, I think it's the same part of the DPCI. And General Labia made it very clear to us at that stage that he did not have the capacity to assist with investigations, and that he was going to embark on a recruitment process to get the capacity to deal with these matters. And remember, the DPCR is also under considerable pressure, with very few members trying to deal with a huge number of cases relating to other crimes as well, state capture, you name it. So the investigative capacity, I stand to be corrected, but it took a really long time before we got dedicated investigators. And I stand to be correct, I think it would have only been sometime in 2021 that the dedicated investigative capacity was created. So if you really think about it, what has happened is that in the past 18 months or so, at most, is where we've been able to get the investigative capacity, get the dedicated, because there's nothing we can do without investigations. That is the starting point. And these are very difficult investigations. So I'm not even going into the complexities because of the age of these matters, because of records, reconstructing records in some instances. So, you know, if you really look at what has happened, it's in the past just about 18 months, there's a considerable amount of work that has happened. But as I said earlier on, we are not where we want to be. We understand this is no excuse. The families, this is cold comfort for the families. I understand that. They don't want to hear about all of these things, especially if they've been waiting for 40 years. But I want to give them the assurance that we are doing everything we can. And, you know, hopefully there will be more families that will feel that they have received justice because of this dedicated focus that we are placing on these matters, because we understand, as many of the honorable members have expressed, the need for families to get closure, to understand, to receive some level of justice for the atrocities and for their suffering. Chair, the issue of Honorable JLS' question about how many cases will be affected by the fact that there may be weak evidence or no evidence, we can't give a number to this because it depends on the evidence. It is only at the point when we get to a point where we say, look, there's no further investigations that can be done in these matters and we don't have sufficient evidence, that the DPPs will make that decision. So we can't give a number to that. Category C, look, we've put down these different categories. For us, in fact, I've got the document here with the monthly checklist. You know, you can't see it, but it's got, you know, it's basically a monthly investigations checklist. And it helps us, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three, call it category A, category B, category C, where different things happen in the different phases. So when cases move from phase two to phase three, phase two has more, for example, and in fact, in phase one, you will see one of the checklists says contact family members. You know, it's on this investigation checklist, identifying potential accused and confirmation of whether we've received documents at that early stage. The second phase is actually compiling these documents, obtaining more statements, affidavits, forensic evidence. The third phase is when we feel we've actually advanced from that stage to the final stage where we could, you know, assess all of this evidence, where there isn't much outstanding at that stage and we are in a position to take a decision. So it's very difficult to put timelines to this. It's really a guide for us, you know. But, you know, if I have to put a timeline to it, we'd say it could take anything up to 6 months in the final phase, but we try to keep the final phase as short as possible. But it all depends on, you know, what are the, and sometimes there may be small things outstanding in the final stage, but it's difficult to get them for various reasons. So that's the position with regard to the categories. The question you raised, Chair, I wanted to deal with it, you know, but you've raised as well the issue of crimes against humanity and charging potential accused for crimes against humanity. Chair, well, you know, given my experience at the International Criminal Court, these are not cases, these types of crimes are not foreign to me in terms of my understanding of it and understanding the need and the importance of charging these international crimes in respect of some of these cases. So we have been working very, in fact, at the very early stages, You know, it's to say that there's resistance on the part of the NPA to deal with this is factually incorrect. There's no resistance. I have been very, very open and engaging with families from the early days to say, let's work together and see how we can get a good case that we can take to court and charge international crimes. These are complex legal issues that require a lot of thought, a lot of engagement. But we have been, as the prosecution, certainly ready to engage with these issues. Yes, there have been different legal views and opinions on this in terms of whether we could charge or couldn't charge, and we in particular matters. And it required us to really consider these matters carefully. I personally got involved in a matter where families, the Foundation for Human Rights, has really been pushing for prosecution of crimes against humanity. And my final response to them was that I am in fact open, and I think there will be appropriate cases where we will be able to charge crimes against humanity, but not in that particular case. For various reasons, including the fact that the matter was in court for trial. When you do bring new charges, you need to inform the accused persons, and then it will further delay, and we are ready to start with that matter. So for various reasons, we decided it's not an appropriate case to take that, to charge those charges. But certainly, as an NPA, we are looking at those, and we understand the importance of bringing these crimes. And once they say, you know, bad facts make bad law. So especially when you're charging for the first time, we really need to make sure that legally we feel that there isn't, and we can in fact charge these crimes, but we need to make sure that we charge it in the appropriate cases. So, you know, hopefully there will be those cases where we will be able to charge crimes against humanity. In terms of the, And Chair, I want to really say this. This is an open platform. We really want to work with the families. We want to work together with them. They have also legal support that we want to work with. So, you know, we can't do it separately. We, as I said earlier on, we all are working towards the same end. We're working for the victims who they represent, and they are, you know, people that we represent as well. So we want to work together with the families of the deceased. Chair, with regard to contact details, you know, as I said to you, it's actually on this investigation checklist. The DPP's offices have contact details, but as Advocate de Kock explained, some where there's family, where there are lawyers representing the families, they actually work through the lawyers. But ideally, we would like to be able to, and I don't think anything stops us from directly, but we wouldn't want the lawyers to then think we're actually bypassing them and speaking directly to the families. But certainly, this is a big deal for us, and we're going to hope that, you know, maybe the one way of measuring whether we're doing this better will be the next time we come for Honorable Hendricks to say we're getting less from families to say they don't know what's going on. But if you do get these, please forward it to our offices. We will look into it and we will make sure that there are follow-ups where there's been any gaps with communication. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I see no further hands from members. Thank you very much to Advocate Atoy and to your team for the progress report. I think we are happy that we have started with this process, since we have promised last year that we are going to be having these regular meetings with ourselves to receive progress report. We do take the suggestion that you have made seriously. I think we will do that. That when the next time you come, we will also invite the head of the Hawks, because there are particular issues that are of serious concern, which we did not want to ask you about them. For instance, with respect to the CRIDEC 4. And former members of the special branch were appointed to investigate that particular case? And what form of insult can you give to those families than doing that? And to prove that that was not correct, they have subsequently changed and appointed other members. And these are the things that come as a final nail to the hearts of the families. So we think that it will be absolutely important that even the Hawks form part of these meetings. So that when you report, we would want to, in our next report, I think the issue that was raised by honorable members of families, for us, our next report will be focusing on that. We are not generally, we don't want to take for granted that because we say there's a checklist, that therefore members, your members have contacted those families. We would want to have a much more detailed report in terms of contact to those members, because it is of serious concern to us that in the last 5 days we have received no less than 4 different family members that are complaining that they have not been contacted. So when you come back in the next four months, we will also be paying a special focus on that, and then we would want to see a substantive progress. This is good progress, but we would want to be seeing a substantive progress from what you have reported. Because indeed, at some point, if we want to treat this as just a normal course of our work, at some point there will come a time where it will be too little too late. So it's important that we stick to the preamble of our constitution. Let us not dishonor those who died for our freedom. And we think that the NTPP, ourselves, and the families should work together to ensure that we honor those who fought for freedom. So we will be paying a particular focus to get detailed reports, which we think that the Advocate de Gaulle would be doing from his DPPs. We would want to get a detailed report as to the process of contacting those families and how far are they. Because even if they're not going to prosecute, the issue is work with them to that decision. Don't make a good decision that you think is good for them. It might be technically correct, but because you have not worked with them to arrive at that particular decision, there might not be an appreciation of your decision. So thank you very much. Thank you very much, NTPP, and to your team. And thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.